it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Good evening. This is the Friends of History Debating Society in Londinium, 92 AD, a beautiful spring evening, cool, bright sunshine, the clouds laden with rain, but not tonight. The flowers of May are here, along with the pollen count, sneezing across the whole landscape of Londinium, crossing here from my home on the other side of the Thames. I was reminded, you know, it really is a beautiful world. Just gorgeous off the Thames, the sunlight, the clouds. And what is going to happen here for the next 2,000 years? I welcome my friend and colleague and confidant, Germanicus. He joins me as the centurions are coming in for their generous cups of wine that we provide. You know, we do have good vineyards here, that warming trend that happens in the 11th century, also happened in the 1st century AD. Do you want to comment on your vineyards, Germanicus?
I enjoy the fruit of the vine, let's put it that way. The vineyards are doing very well.
Yes, very well. We don't work, we own. So the Greeks work for us, and we're free to come and speculate about the 21st century. Before we move to the topics at hand, which are all existential risk, all of them, everything we've got tonight is capable of blowing up in your hands. I mentioned I've had an insight as to why we can do this. It's been a puzzle for some time how it is that here, Roman citizens, far from Rome, yes, thank you very much, equus class, meaning we're not senators, don't want to be, can't afford it, a million sesterces. That's the minimum cost. You can sit in the back bench for it. No, thank you very much. I don't want to travel. But I've had this thought for some time, reading about a phenomenon that was discovered in the 20th century. Einstein's telescope is associated with this. If you focus your telescope on certain stars, what happens is you are because of gravity, Your sight is directed past that star deep into the cosmos. So you're seeing an object thanks to the refraction around the object you think you're looking at. You see an object that's tens and hundreds of light years beyond what you could imagine with your telescope. That's what we are experiencing. Right here, this spot, Londinium, apparently has the ability to project 2,000 years. We don't know why. We don't know what'll be here in 2,000 years in this very wine bar. We're not sure. Maybe something exists there that's not here now, but we're getting the benefit of it. Maybe they've invented a time machine. Maybe there's a clockmaker here. We don't know. But it's the best I can do for why we can leap from the 1st century AD to the 21st century. And no more. There's a wall here we can't get past. Does that mean there is no more? That's mysterious, isn't it? But you have to speculate. However, back to the matter at hand. Germanicus is full up with research this week because we are told by the authorities in London, 2026 London, not 92 AD London. But it is good that London's at the game. We're told that at the end of May, 2026, the Earth will reach what is called a tipping point for the oil reserves. In other words, at that point, the network starts to crash, and you might not be able to buy gasoline or diesel at any price. That's what we're told right now. At the same time, we're given to understand that the negotiation, the bazaar between our emperor, Trump, and the Parthians, represented by a Parthian council, sometimes called Iran in the 21st century, the Parthians have presented their ideas of what will resolve the conflict. It consists of everything but the suspect nuclear weapons program. The Parthians, the Iranians, they want the Strait of Hormuz opened. They want to be paid. They want their sanctions lifted. They want the war in Lebanon to end immediately and Hezbollah and the IDF retreat back to Israel. There are a few more petty demands, but that's the big – oh, they want to be paid for reparations for the damage done by the U.S. Air Force and the Israeli Air Force during the bombing raid. That's enough to know that that's their offer. It has a 30-day time limit. In other words, they're playing the deadline game now as well. I don't think we'll find them chickening out, however. These are the Parthians, Persians, Iranians, all three. They're all of them. And they have not been successfully invaded or conquered from the West since Alexander, more than 2,000 years. That's their record. It's a very good record. If they were a baseball team, you'd figure they'd be in the World Series every year of holding on against invaders. So all that I put down before Germanicus. Right now, the offer from the Trump administration is unclear. The goals of the war from the Trump administration have been unclear since February 28th. Are they regime change? Are they ballistic missiles? Are they the nuclear weapons program? Are they the Straits of Hormuz? It can't be the Straits of Hormuz. They were not part of the discussion on February 28th. So that's ruled out as a goal. And there are a few other goals we could mention, but that's enough to know that the two sides, the metaphor in the 20th century was talking past each other. Germanicus, you've been doing your homework. Well, here's the problem. We have 30 days to solve this, or the world will move into an oil crisis, which will grind on for years once the machinery stops and the nations are scrambling like a lifeboat scenario to hold on as long as they can. So your measure of this standoff. Good day to you, Germanicus.
Good evening, Gaius. You know, we have spoken about this, not in enormous detail and depth, but we've noted that the last crude carriers, very large crude carriers bearing oil from the Persian Gulf, arrived at their destinations now almost a couple weeks ago. And we are subsisting on stockpiles of strategic reserves, and those are going to run out. And there are other sources for oil, but there are not enough of them to make up what is lost. And in fact, the U.S. imports well over 2 million barrels a day, in large part because it doesn't have the refining capacity to deliver all the oil and oil products that the U.S. needs. And so it has to get the good stuff from the Persian Gulf. So all of this is building up, and the shortages are remarkable here in the sense that we are literally facing a cliff in the next month because the decline is so precipitous at this point that you could see oil, and analysts are already speculating, of course, that oil could go up beyond 200 to 300, and some have even gone as high as 370. So the fact is that the price of drivable gasoline is has gone up by 15-20% just in a few days. So if it doubles and triples on that, it's very difficult. I mean, we're talking about analysts at Bloomberg and J.P. Morgan, especially, and the consequences have a ripple effect. The price of oil can go up 10%, and the U.S. can weather that. But if you have 100, 200, 300%, it's going to be just terrible. And, of course, it'll hit others even harder. And one of the great ironies of the blockade is that the U.S. is allowing tankers to leave Iran on their way to China, because the last thing we want to do especially in advance of Trump's upcoming visit to Beijing to see the Chinese Emperor Xi. The last thing we want is for that to fail because we've stopped a crude carrier, a very large crude carrier, on its way to China. But what we have done is secondary sanctions. So we have what we've done is we've targeted the large petrochemical oil refineries processing Iranian crude. But just today, the Chinese said, "Hey, you know, we're gonna keep producing it. We don't care." So that's already an escalation that just occurred. Now, what China's getting from the Persian Gulf is less than a third of what it typically gets, but it's still a lot more than what Europe's getting. And so in a way, it's like the old cliche, cutting off your nose to spite your face. Europe is being completely starved of petroleum products, whereas oil is still heading to India and, more importantly, to China. And just today also, and this is rather a straw in the wind, the Japanese refiner Taiyo Oil is buying a cargo of Russian oil from the Sakhalin 2 project, and with a U.S. sanctioned tanker, the Voyager, scheduled to arrive in Japan today. In other words, the Japanese are breaking with us because their situation is potentially so dire. They do have the world's largest strategic petroleum reserve, but that's diminishing daily.
They've started releasing it, yes.
Yeah, but this all builds and builds. And so if you have a 10% shortage day by day, soon you're up into billions of barrels of shortage.
So your research is consistent with the end of May as the tipping point.
Yeah. Yeah, and all the graphs show that, and that's where the stored oil gives out, and you're in a situation where, this is petroleum storage altogether, gasoline, distillates, and jet fuel, has declined. I'd say I'm just looking at the figures, by about 25% already. And that's all right where it is now if it was to recover, because that would track with the typical ups and downs of product storage in the petroleum world. But that's not going to happen. It's just going to keep plunging. And so we're going to be at a loss, and the inflation will be tremendous for all of us, because the shortage is enough to do what they call crush demand. And once demand is crushed, people aren't driving, they aren't traveling, you get the recession. It's economic activity across the board crashes.
Do we get a response from the emperor? Does the emperor or his committee have a plan?
The big problem here, there are several, I can just run through them quickly. There are two strategic goals that are at war. There's Israel's strategic goals and the U.S. strategic goals, and they were never coterminous. They were never in harmony, and they were never agreed upon between the two quote-unquote allied belligerent parties. And I think that's one of the reasons that the war objectives have never been publicly spelled out, because it's impossible, given the fact that they are essentially divergent. So you have the allies going in two different directions, and the strategy they pursued was not a strategy at the time of war's initiation. It was a gambit. It was a single move on the chessboard. You wouldn't even call it a tactics. It was an operational gambit, and it completely failed. And the Israelis having managed to essentially push us were pushing the emperor into a war, then pushed us to break off negotiations when they were supposedly reaching some kind of resolution, and then pushed us into the blockade, which was a terrible idea. And the betting is, and I think it's not a strategy, it's a rationalization. The betting is that it will hurt China over time, because China's getting only about a third of its daily consumption of Iranian oil, and as a result, it's going to be short. But China has ways of counterbalancing it. First of all, Russia can send lots of oil to China, and China's getting lots of natural gas through the big pipeline that has just recently been constructed and is now in operation. So China also has tremendous renewable capability, mostly in terms of solar and wind. And they also have an absolutely tremendous coal generating capacity. So they have cushions, which I think are even better than the U.S., but we're gambling that China will be hurt, and that they will therefore tell Iran to come to terms with the U.S. And I'm not sure that is going to happen. They will be hurting. They are hurting, but we're going to be hurting more, not in absolute terms, but in terms of the perceptions of the American public.
Does the White House have a plan? I've not found one. Have you found one, Germanicus?
They have the timeless modern American strategy pursued since the Korean War, and especially since Vietnam. And I call that strategy the one day at a time strategy. And in Vietnam, Mr. Nixon was able to come up with an actual strategy of disengagement, but it proceeded so glacially that by the time we finally disengaged our forces, some time before the fall of Saigon, it was already a shambolic defeat. The defeat had been consummated. It wasn't a real strategy. It was an extrication. And the U.S. has not had strategy at all during the period of the GWAT. Again, the strategy pursued by Mr. Bush and Mr. Cheney was a strategy, we'll invade and then everything will turn out. And all we've been able to do effectively as an imperial power is to overthrow regimes. And we failed at producing any kind of positive result, which would be, you know, a stable country with a new regime allied to us. Instead, we get these failed states that we've created, at least seven of them, you know, Somalia, Yemen, Syria, Libya, Iraq. And we did the same thing with Ukraine. I mean, Ukraine now is a shell of its former self and is of really no value as a buffer or as a front line for Europe. It's a complete mess.
One more consideration, Germanicus. The Straits of Hormuz were not part of the conversation February 28th till the end of March. I've looked at it. They just were not there. By the end of March, they developed into the story. The Straits of Hormuz are what the president now says will be solved by having the U.S. Navy escort cargo vessels, oil tankers, through the Straits of Hormuz. That is not a solution. That's what you'd have to say at this point, a gesture.
Yeah, you're saying it's not a solution if we could actually do it. It's even far removed from being a solution if we can't do it. And believe me, we cannot do this.
It's the recommendation right now.
Oh, I know, but we don't have nearly enough ships to escort nearly enough tankers to make it anything more than, as you say, a gesture.
My question is, solving the Straits of Hormuz does not solve the war. It does not solve anything. It's a problem that was created because the other solutions didn't work. Here's what I've learned since 1940. Yeah, this is what I've learned. if you believe the other side is in danger of collapsing because of some victory you've just won, you're wrong.
Right.
That's it. You're wrong.
It gets worse than that. If you believe that you've collapsed the other side or can collapse it through a set of pre-programmed moves, you're putting yourself in an extreme vulnerability because not later, but sooner, you're going to discover that no, it didn't bring them down, and now you have no option, no fallback, no plan B. And that's where we are, and that's where we've been. And the real issue here is that by coming up with another, what you might call at best a stratagem, which is to say escorting as opposed to blockading, and then that doesn't work out, you run the risk of the Iranians deciding to go back to war because they believe that this is an asymmetric situation in which they have the leverage and the upper hand. And the having been so wrongfully attacked in the first place, they are in no mood to hand the U.S. A kind of climb down, a off ramp, as people like to say. They're going to make their demands and stick to them. And if we start playing around, I think that's going to lead eventually to a resumption of hostilities.
Let's tell the Vietnam story. We've got people who are not around for the Vietnam story. The Centurions are nodding because they've not heard it either. And the Vietnam story involves all of this any day now. And the ability of in asymmetric warfare of the weaker side to adapt is all in the Vietnam story. We're going to cut we're going to use electronics to cut the Ho Chi Minh Trail. Oh my goodness, the things we lived through, Germanicus. When we come back, and I mentioned to those of you in the 21st century, we have a Roman orchestra. They're union, okay, and they're fussy right now because I've been using them a lot during the week. I pay them well, but if I'm a minute late or a minute early, they want to be paid for it, special, twice as much. Right now, they're taking a May Day holiday. I know. It's not May Day. They know it's not May Day, but May Day fell in during their work week, and they wanted to make it up. It all comes to the fact the orchestra's not here. So we're going to take a slight break. The Centurions can relax, and we'll be right back. Germanicus is Michael Vlahos. Gaius is John Batzer. We're in Londinium. It's 92 AD. The orchestra's on. They're not on strike. They're just taking their May Day on May the 3rd. Why not? So every day is May Day. We'll be right back.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.